What do CEOs need to know about sales these days? A lot. Outdated sales strategies and tactics plague most companies today. Listen to what innovative CEOs and experts have to say about how to change all that with Sales Talk for CEOs. Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. Today, we're going to talk about what CEOs need to know about storytelling. I know a lot of you out there, especially some of you technology geeks, right? You start a company and you're really more about the thing that you invented or the thing that you built to sell. But you also know that you need to show up in front of your customers, in front of your team, maybe at a trade show where you're speaking, or even just on LinkedIn. You need to show up in a way and tell your story that in a way that has people gravitate towards you, that has people listen to you and really endears them to you, right? So what my guest today does is he transforms leaders into better storytellers and has them thinking about, how do I show up? What's the content and delivery that I need to get my message across? And he brings his years of experience working with big brands on high-stake messages. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Alice. How are you today?
I'm doing great. It's a little cloudy here in Reno, so I'm hoping it clears up, but I actually heard it's going to rain, which is kind of unusual for here, so it's kind of nice when it does.
Well, we're not going to rain on your parade today. We're going to bring some sunshine to your podcast today.
Awesome. All right. Well, you're in Montreal. What's the weather like there?
It is absolutely gorgeous. We have an extended summer, so I'm going to rush this episode so I can get outside. How about that?
Right? We're on a Friday, right? So Friday afternoon for you. And so that'll be great. All right. Well, before we jump into more on storytelling, tell us a little bit about what disruptive influence does and who you do it for.
So disruptive influence is twofold. The name came from what was written on my high school report cards. I was branded as the disruptive influence in class. So that kind of stuck with me for a long time until I turned it into a motto, a company, and a podcast. And it was really a fancy way of just saying I'm an SHIT disturber. So, which I think every CEO should be. So what I do and what we do is we help, like you said before, we help transform leaders into better, more effective storytellers through our disruptive DNA framework, through coaching, through workshops, through keynotes. And we really kind of believe that a great story is a terrible thing to waste.
I love that. Well, another way you could think of yourself is a catalyst, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of an SHIT disturber, but or disruptor, but I get it.
And Catalyst is good.
It's pretty funny that that stuck with you since high school. But you know, I think it's a good thing in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, our schools have been the same for hundreds of years, and they need to change. We won't get into that topic today, but I think that some of the really bright kids who are very active and interested in things get labeled as naughty or disruptive or things like that. And that's still happening today. I used to be a school teacher a long, long time ago. And I tried never to label any kids like that when I was teaching, but I saw it happen constantly. And I'm like, wow, I think that kid is just pretty smart and wants to be active doing something. And instead we label them as naughty or disruptive because they can't sit in their seat. So anyway, that's a topic for another day. Let's talk about storytelling. So, all right, let's jump in and talk about first, what is the problem? People come to you and what kinds of things do they say to you that they need, you know, like they're wondering like, oh my gosh, can I present myself better? Can I tell a better story? Like, what do you hear from them?
So that's exactly it. And the key word is when they come to me, right? Sometimes people are not even problem aware. We won't even talk about that right now. But the ones who are problem aware say, hey, I'm a very intelligent person. I'm running a company. I'm trying to either raise funding or get more customers. I'm being asked to be on podcasts. I'm being asked to be on stage. I'm being asked to deliver a really good talk, an inspiring talk to my board of directors or my team. And wow, am I very long-winded? Wow, am I very awkward up there? Wow, do I move a lot? People are telling me I move a lot. People are telling me I'm rambling a lot and my slides are full of so much jargon that no one can follow. So the ones who know say, hey, I need a presentation coach, or I need to become a better storyteller. And what that means is they really want to connect with audiences better. They want to come across better. They want to get their message across with feeling over facts. And they want to shine in ways they haven't really shown or shined before. I'll have to look up the proper proper tense of that one. But they really want to transform their approach to storytelling.
Yeah, well, I think what you said is, you know, when they're aware, right? Because I have seen countless CEOs stand up in front of whatever group and not do a very good job. And it makes me sad, really, because I know them and I know they have a good story to tell, but they just don't know how to get up and tell it, right? And it does take preparation. I mean, I've been speaking for many, many years in front of all different kinds of groups. And I know that I have to prepare, but I have to really know my audience so I can get the message just right. So let's start there with your CEOs that you're helping them tell a better story. How do you help them get to know their audience? Because it could be different, right? If they're on a podcast, if they're in front of their own team, if they're in front of the board of directors, or let's say somebody's asked them to speak at a conference or something. Where do you start?
That's exactly right. It's a great place to start. What you do is you ask questions first and foremost. Like you just said, who is going to be in the room? What is the topic? What's the conference about? But you also have to ask yourself, what do I want out of this? And on what action will I want them to take? Am I informing them? Am I trying to get a decision? And am I trying to sell something? Am I trying to change perception? Am I trying to do all of this together? What you also want to do is be mindful that people take in information in different ways. Some people are more auditory. Some people are more visual. Some people want more emotion baked in. Some people want a little bit of everything. I think there's actually like 14 different combinations or something of different levels of what makes information really trigger for people. Then you want to say, who are the real key decision makers? I think for CEOs, you really want to worry about the people who have sway in the room. I think that's where you're going to focus your attention more. And you're going to say, how can I tell my story in a way that's going to get through to them? You also want to get a little bit personal. So if it's a smaller room of, let's say, strangers or people you know, you might want to refresh yourselves on who the people are in the room and not the roles in the room, but the people. What do they care about? What are they into? Do you know if they like small talk? Up here in Montreal, I'll be very stereotypical. Do they like hockey? You know what I mean? Like, these sorts of things are never a bad thing to open up your conversation with, to open up your room with. What are they scared of? What do they want? What will actually shift their mindset and get their hearts and minds bought into whatever it is you have to say or tell? What might actually move them to take action? Then you have to start saying, okay, how can I make what I'm saying actually contrast and stand out? How can I connect with them on an emotional level or a buying level or decision level? And how do I convert? How do I get that decision that I'm hoping for? How do I get that outcome I'm looking for? So audience, if you're at a conference, you're probably not going to know much about the audience. Ask the organizer, hey, what are the typical people in this audience? What are they looking for? What have they responded to in the past? What's the format? How long do I have? Will it be a Q&A? Will this be a workshop? Do you want me to try to sell them on an idea? Do you want me to lecture? Do you want me to educate? Do you want me to entertain? That being said, I like to start with personal style. That's a huge thing in of itself, is you should still be coming in as the enhanced professional version of you. So a lot of people say, you know, I didn't perform well, or I put on a performance. You want to perform, but you don't want to put on a performance because then you're acting. You just want to be the amplified professional version of yourself. And you want to give care to that audience. You want to care enough that you've stayed concise enough, that you've stayed interesting enough, that you've not put yourself behind the podium and shrunk your body and soul, but you've actually opened your mind and heart and hands and connected with them. And you actually brought them something relevant that they can walk away with that day. Again, maybe I shifted there a little bit more to on stage or on a podcast. Board of directors meetings a little bit different, but you can still bring some contrast, pattern disruption. I'm swaying all over the place here because I'm so excited to answer this question, but you can still bring something very interesting to their day that stands out, makes them think, makes them digest easily, and makes it very clear, again, what they should do next.
Yeah. So it has to be relevant. I mean, that's the key. But so you've got a CEO in front of you, you're going to ask them all of these questions. You're going to let them talk about the audience and the topic and all the things that you mentioned. And if they don't know who the audience is very well, then you're going to make them go back and find out, because this is where it all starts. You cannot put your presentation together without really knowing and understanding the audience well, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so you get them right there and get all of that information out of them. I'm sure you take a ton of notes, feed it back to them, make sure it's right. And then you've got to start. Now, I know you have a framework that you share with them and help them build their presentation. So let's talk about that framework.
That's right. So what we call it is, or what I call it, is the disruptive DNA framework for storytelling. And what that is just a very easy to remember and to apply approach to telling a story that actually does the little things I just weaved in before. I weaved in three C's, which were contrast, connection, and conversion. And what it does is weaves it in through D, which is differentiation. You actually have to understand your positioning and the differentiation that is either your brand differentiation or what is different about how you're going to approach this or what's different about what you're going to talk about. You can also just rename that as positioning. Then you start getting into narrative. What are the actual stories we're going to tell in the different settings and different ways and different arenas that we're going to tell them? So often for brands, that is the advertising itself. That is the marketing itself. That is the go-to-market messages. For a talk or podcast, this is the stories you're going to share on the podcast, on the stage. What are those narratives that you want people to be able to walk away with and say, hey, I remember Jeff spoke about XYZ. I remember that story where in high school, he was branded as a disruptive influence. And now he he turned it into a podcast and a company. People remember stories over facts. Like I always say, facts tell, stories sell.
Yeah, like I mean, I think the remembering thing, Jeff, is so important. If you talk for 15 minutes or an hour and people leave there and cannot repeat anything that you said, or, oh, like, that was a great talk. What was it about? Oh, I don't know, something about maybe being different, or like they cannot really say, right, was about, or repeat any of the words that you said. It was kind of useless, because that means you didn't really get your point across.
That's right. So usually when you see me on a stage, I'll say, if there's one thing I want you to remember today, which is a classic speaking trick, but I'll say, if there's one thing I want you to remember today, it's this. And I'll usually have it repeated a few times in that 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 1 hour, so that people, because exactly that, Alice, we understand that you only take in probably about 25% of what you're hearing overall anyway. Retention is probably 25 to 50%, like in the hour after, the few hours after, drops dramatically the next day. Right. By the next week, it's gone. But I remember when I was teaching, or, you know, they're not when I was, when I still teach, I don't know that I always use the slide anymore, but for beginner speakers, I would say, know your shit. That would be the one page I always came back to. I said, hey, everyone, if there's one thing I want you to remember today, is know your shit. Then, depending on the audience, I said, or they're going to know your shit. And what I meant by that was, people were coming in with nerves. People were coming in with anxiety around, what am I going to talk about? I'm not an expert, this and that. What if, what if, what if? Always looking at the bad side of the what if. I try to say, well, what if we looked at the good side of what if? What is the best that can happen? What if I do really awesome? How do you do really awesome? You put in the reps. You know your shit. And once you know your stuff, you're practiced, you're rehearsed, you've gone through the motions, that it's muscle memory at that point. And don't make the mistake. I'm not saying memorize your talk. I'm saying it comes so naturally that you can say it 10 different ways and it still lands and it still feels natural. And if you know
you're still hit those key points no matter what, right? Because I feel like I don't memorize my talks. I know my topic, but I also know there's four things I need to talk about and I need to get through them in this order. And so there might be different stories interwoven, or I might say the words a little bit differently, but my flow will always be the same and I will hit those points because that's what I need the audience to remember.
Exactly. And it's like, really, they'll walk away probably remembering the title. They'll probably remember the one or two key points that really stuck home with them. They'll really remember the stories. And like you know the saying, people will forget how you know what you said to them, what you did to them, that sort of thing. They'll never forget how you made them feel. Yeah. So I'll even equate that to a comedy show. Alice, have you ever been to a comedy show?
Yes.
On the way home, 30 minutes later, could you repeat any of the jokes, any of the one-liners that you heard on stage?
Probably not.
But you said, wow, I had a great time.
Yeah. I would be like, oh my gosh, I was laughing so much. That was so funny.
So the feeling lasted with you longer than the words. The reality is we're communicating, I think it's 93% of human to human communication is tone of voice and body language. How you made people feel, how it sounded, how it felt. What we say is such a small percentage of that. So you knew you loved the comedy show. You couldn't remember anything, but you remembered in your body, I loved it. It was great. You might still be able to get one or two jokes off. Probably not. Probably not. And if we go back to this disruptive DNA framework for storytelling, again, we want to find our point of differentiation. What's going to make us stand out in any room or any market? What is our narrative? What are the stories we're telling? And the A is action. So we talked about it before. A and A go together, audience and action. What action do I want my audience to take as a result of what I am putting out there? For me on this podcast, sure. At the end, I love people connected. I'd love to work with some of your audience. That would be amazing. But the reality is my goal here is to educate. And to entertain a little bit because I can't help it. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's the action I want people to take, is to listen to the end, is to perhaps connect with me after, perhaps reach out with some questions. I can mention it now. I have a disruptive DNA worksheet that they can contact me and download. So I want them to become better storytellers. I want them to apply the things we're talking about today. But my goal is just education. It's not to get a decision. It's not to make a sale. It's just to educate.
Yeah. And it's really good to know what you're doing when you're up there, right? Because this is where I think people stumble. Like, oh my gosh, like, what am I up here to do? And if you don't know that beforehand and prepare for that, you will ramble all over the place because you're not sure. Should I get them to do something? Am I just being funny? Am I trying to educate? Like, that's no good, right? You've got to know your purpose. You've got to know exactly what you want to leave the audience with. And it's just so important. All right. So here we are. We have a CEO who's come to you. You've asked them all the questions. You've taught them the framework. And now they're going to put their talk together, whether it's for the board or at a conference or their own team or whatever it is. It's an important message, a message that matters. They need to get it across in the best way possible. So what happens next after you discuss the framework? Do you have them write it out and then practice it, or how does that go?
So we start actually in smaller steps. We start just seeing what's naturally happening. I asked them, I said, well, where do you think you need help? Right? So we want to see how self-actualized or self-aware they are already. Well, why do you think you need coaching right now? Who has told you that? What data has given you that idea? And I'll give you an example. When I started with one CEO of quite a successful fintech company, when we got on that first call just to see if this would be a match, he got on looking at me in profile. And he was looking at me on his other screen and a little bit lower in frame, a little bit out of resolution. And I said, hey, are you on investors calls like this? He goes, yeah, why? I said, oh my. So I helped him right in that one call just with the obvious thing. So we start attacking the obvious first. Another CTO I was working with last week moves around a lot, naturally just moves around, looks around a lot. So with the CEO, we corrected, first of all, just how he's showing up in frame.
Look in the camera.
Exactly. Lighting and eye contact.
Right.
With the CTO, who actually happened to be very nicely lit, very much in frame. I could hear them very well. They were moving all over the place. So I said, hey, we got to do something about these movements because you're looking very shifty. So we look at the first obvious things, the body language, the tone of voice. Then, you know, just how they're naturally talking to you, because I want to enhance what you're naturally doing, but I want to make it more audience friendly. Then for the talk, we say, well, what do you have to talk about? Like, what is it about? What's the context? How much time?
I'm going to just pause you for a second and go back, because I just had a thought. You're saying, like, what are they naturally doing? So I notice sometimes CEOs don't smile, especially on video, you know, and they don't even realize it, you know, and just saying to them, hey, I think this will come across a bit better if you can smile occasionally. Now, obviously not if it's bad news, but that's a whole different kind of a talk when you have context, to deliver bad news. But typically when you're talking to a board and you're presenting numbers, and there's usually something good that you are presenting, or at least I hope you are, because your company's growing and thriving. If they're not, call me, okay? And but you would want to smile at the appropriate times. And I think because they don't realize what they look like on video, and if they're like me, they're looking at the camera, they're not looking at themselves. They should be anyway. They just might not realize that they're not smiling at all.
So here's a trick. Here's a few tricks for that. So first I'll preface to say, I love that you mentioned that. The idea here is that your delivery should fit the context. So smiling makes sense. Go ahead and smile. Like you just said, if you're delivering bad news, you're going to be like, hey, great news. Great news, everyone. We're down 50% quarter over quarter, you know, something like that, which I think the math dictates that's not very good. But you want to fit the context. You also want to vary. You want to vary your delivery. So what I see a lot is people come in very monotone. There's no pause. There's no breath. There's no shift in their cadence.
Yeah. There and no variance in loud or soft, you know, so make a point. You've got to speak up a little, or then you calm down a bit to discuss something else.
Exactly. So we want to take a little bit from the stage, a little bit from performance, but say, how can we have this person deliver it in a better, more interesting way? As for smiling, a little trick is, you said, well, you're looking at the camera. I'm not looking at the camera right now. I have you shrunk in my browser near the camera. So it looks like I might be looking at you. I'm, you know, in my mind's eye, I'm looking you right in the eye right now. You could probably tell I'm not looking directly in the camera, but I'm close enough that, hey, he's making some eye contact right now. So that's a very good way of doing it. Problem is, there are two versions of me to the left, and you can't help but glance over.
You can't be darting around like this, right?
You can't help but glance.
Your eyes are darting.
Yeah. You can't help but glance over at yourself here and there. So actually, another trick is, if you're already very comfortable with yourself on screen, there is a real thing. It's called Zoom fatigue. People, you've surely heard this, where people
very are real.
Very tired of looking at themselves all day, because you can't help it. You're like, you are your favorite person in the world. So I always, as much as possible, turn myself off, my self view on that. And I really try to focus on the people on the screen. So that's very important. Now, if you can't get everyone up to camera level, if you have to look at your other screen, preface that. Say, hey, I have you. I'm looking at you. I just have to put you on my other screen for a minute. Not ideal. Or you say, hey, everyone, there's so many people on this screen. When I'm looking down, I'm actually looking at you. You're just a little bit lower down on my screen. Don't worry, I'm not distracted. Because people will pick up on every slight distraction, anything that takes away your focus, and they're going to get rattled because you're not paying attention when you really are. So I'm throwing
just give them a clue, right? Because I take a lot of notes still. I know there's AI note takers out there. I've used them all. I still like to take my own notes. Mm-hmm. And so I usually have my screen set up. So my person that is right here and I'm looking at them and looking at the camera and my notes over to the left. So occasionally I'm going to glance over there and look at my notes so I can write. But luckily I can type. I touch type because I'm old enough, right? I actually learned on a typewriter. So I can actually touch type and not have to look at what I'm typing, unlike most people these days. But it is just that clue. You're giving them, hey, here's what I'm doing. If I'm looking around, I'm looking at my notes or I'm looking at all of you. So I think that is so important just to give them that verbal cue.
And that goes back into the audience care. And it also goes back to you taking control of the situation and the stage. You're setting expectations, which we can get into, you know, in terms of if we dive into presentation skills techniques, you're setting expectations. And that falls into everything about setting it up, setting expectations for how you're going to act on this call. Do you want questions now, later? Establishing the rules of the game, but making people feel comfortable and giving them an expectation of what they can expect, because no one likes to be surprised.
Yeah.
Certain cases in life you do, but not so much. You know, people like to know what's coming.
They do. They like that structure. They like to know what the structure is and they like that security. And I totally agree. That's why I believe so much in agendas when you are doing board meetings or team meetings, like everyone knows why we're here. Yeah. And then we make sure we hit that, right? It's like, here's the agenda. We make sure we hit it. We make sure everybody knows why we're here and we deliver on that promise.
Every meeting and every story should have a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So now you're ready to get them to put the content together. Where do you start? Because you were saying you kind of start with smaller bites. Do you start with the stories they want to tell to get their point across? Do you help them outline? How do you actually get them started on the content?
Well, we start looking at the topic. So we start looking at why are you speaking? What do you have to say? We just hinted to it a second ago around purpose. What is the purpose of this talk? And in this sense, I don't mean so much the outcome. I mean, why are you there? So like we were just talking earlier about a Disrupt GTM conference. I'm speaking at Disrupt GTM. What am I speaking about? Exactly this. Disruptive DNA and basically how to tell stories that sell, or the secret to stories that sell. So what that does is combines disruption, storytelling, and secrets, right? There's intrigue to how go-to-market leaders can sell. Right, everyone's going to market, they're trying to sell something. So it all ties together. My purpose there is to show founders and leaders and executives how to go to market with better storytelling. So it makes perfect sense. It aligns. So we start with what is your purpose? What are you trying to get across? We look at the broad strokes and we look at some people already have their talk. That I love when they come in with their talk already, because we could dive right in. Now I could see the natural mistakes they might be making. Now I can see where they're going too long in content. Now I can see where the graphic or the very often way too many words on a slide are detracting from them as the central important player in this whole kind of presentation, right? Any, and here's a little side pro tip, any visual support is support. It supports you. In most cases, you should be able to do your talk, your presentation, your spiel without the support. That's how important.
Yeah, Jeff,
you are.
I mean, it still kills me today. And, you know, I mostly work with in the sales arena, right? So you're going, whether it's the CEO or their team or a combination thereof, that's going to present to a customer and they bring out a deck with so many words on it. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, first of all, people, do you know that if I'm reading, I can't listen to what you're saying? I can read or I can listen, but I can't do both. So now you're killing me, right?
There and you then, go.
You know, they rely on those PowerPoints or whatever medium they've used, you know, they rely on that deck to remind them what to say versus having prepared in the way that they should have so that they can deliver. And the slides are just helping the audience remember something, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent of no words on slides, a picture that helps the audience get it or remember it or whatever, but it's just a picture and you do all the talking. You don't, if you need notes, please have notes in your hand. I have no problem with that. But those notes should not be on the slide.
That's
the slide
right.
should be helping the learner, the person in the audience.
That's exactly
and
it.
Boy, I'll tell you, it's like pulling teeth to get those words off those slides. And I'm like, if there is no graphic that goes with what you're saying, then the screen is blank and you're talking and they're listening to you, or you're asking them a question and they're answering, but don't put a slide up just to put a slide up, right? So yeah, that is really something that I cannot believe after all this time and all the famous people out there like Nancy Duarte who teach these things about how to put a deck together and how to put these presentations together, people like you and my friend Brian Miller, like why are we still letting people put 10 bullets on a slide? Oh my gosh, people just
because of insecurity.
And also because they don't practice. They don't build in the time to practice before they get in front of the customer.
That's exactly right. So actually to wrap up on your first question there is we'll look at if they already have something or we'll start with the broad strokes. What's the outcome you're looking for? How are you going to make this point? What are the 3 points we can make? We look at the time, then we craft it around that. Yeah. Then eventually we'll go in once our structure is in place. Like you should never start with your slide design. You should never start with any of that. But sometimes it helps people just throw something, right? Look at almost your post-it notes or your slide view and start throwing in the broad strokes. Just saying topic 1, 2, 3 or point 1, 2, 3 and start saying, okay, what story makes sense around that to defend that? What is a visual cue or the one word or the one number on that slide that's going to make that hit? Sometimes even graphs are cool. I'm not a big graphs guy, but it helps people in your audience very often. So a lot of people are very visual. And what I said a second ago about insecurity is people either have this curse of knowledge and they don't know what to remove. You're always way better to remove much more than you think because people can only take in so much. And then if you're the fourth or fifth speaker of the day, do you think people have energy to listen to you and read all of your slides? Besides, isn't it a little bit of an insult to your audience if you're just standing up there reading them slides? Couldn't you have just sent that?
Yeah, plus if you give them a small dose of what you want them to remember. Then you give them a larger dose of it via a follow-up of some type. Like now here's something you could read or watch or listen to that has more detail. And you can do that in your own time when you might be able to take some notes or when you have, you know, quiet time. So if you try to smash it all into your few little minutes or even an hour that you have, they can't take it in anyway. So give yourself the opportunity to give them a follow-up with more information.
Exactly. And again, that depends on context, right? You're not going to tell everything to everyone all in that time that you have. You want to leave them. What does a great story do? It leaves people wanting more. So what we do sometimes is they will have that anthology of a presentation. We say, okay, now how do we start chopping this down? That's okay. Leave that together as your handout, as your appendix, as your printable version, as your take-home version. If people are interested to learn more, they can do it on their time. So that's a hard and fast rule. If you have to read them the slides, just send them the slides and go do something else and don't waste everyone's time. Then you touched on something about reps. So repetitions are very key. You said, hey, I think people do it because they don't have practice. Well, you have to be practicing the right things. you know, people can practice all they want. We've seen people get up on stage and they've practiced for a month and they're still reading you the slides. They're just practicing the wrong things. So you have to practice now knowing your topic enough that you can deliver it 10 different ways, that you've paused, you've used different voice intonation, you've used the right body language and the right cues at the right moments. Like, these are the things you want to practice. You want to practice enough that you know your shit, you know your content enough that you can get quizzed on it, that if the screen explodes, you're still good, guys. I can continue. I know exactly what I want to say. So there's, you know, I like to definitely blend my onstage presentations with performance, in that I like to be timed with my slides. I like everything to have a song and a dance. They're a real partner. My slides are a real partner versus support. But if that unit crapped out right there, I'm good to go. Like, I'm going to finish my point. I'm good to go. So you have to be able to be good to go. So where we start is I actually have them do 2-minute presentations. I said, come to me next week with a 2-minute presentation. Obviously, I show them structure, audience, delivery, all these types of things up front. And I say, come back next week with a 2-minute presentation, no verbal support. And I learned this years ago when I was early in my agency career. It was taught to me. And this is like a derivative of Dale Carnegie methods. Come back 2 minutes, no visual support. And what that does, stops the reliance on slides.
Yes, the 2-minute without slides. If you cannot talk for 2 minutes without a slide, we're in trouble, right?
And what's the other thing? What do you think the other benefit of the 2 minutes is?
Concise. They have to be concise.
There you go. So it teaches people that they can get a point across in 2 minutes. You can actually educate someone in 2 minutes. And it forces them to say, what am I going to leave in? And usually the first week, it's 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. And then we say, okay, what do we chop from there? And you start learning how concise you can actually be. Then we go from there. We go to 5 minutes. We go to visual support. And this is for people who have time. If you're coming to me, said, Jeff, I need help with my keynote next week. I said, cool, let's just dive in.
Right. Yeah. Everybody doesn't have that kind of time or know ahead of time. But I think if you, for example, if you regularly talk to your board, great. Then you know you're going to have to do that every quarter or every how often, and get that down, like learn how to do that and be really good at it, right? And then if you have some other kinds of things that you don't do as often, that's a different kind of preparation. But for sales, for example, it's something that if the founder is doing the selling, or if they've got support from engineers or perhaps even salespeople, then they got to get it down. Like, this is how you do a great sales presentation. It goes like this.
That's it.
You just got to have it. You got to get it down. And each presentation is going to be a little different depending on the prospect that you're presenting to or the customer that you're presenting to, but they still flow like this. And here's each part
that
everyone's going to play.
You still will want to break. You don't want to be so predictable in that it's always the same. But what you want to do, yes, there's a certain way to grab people's attention. You want to make sure there's a flow. But what you really want to do, so if it's a board meeting, you want to learn how to package the thing you're trying to say better. You want to learn how to put that into one headline that says it all. You want to know either how to use a metaphor or an analogy to drive home the point. You want to connect it to a certain emotion because you're looking for a certain outcome. And one of the best things you can do is practice your objection handling. That's when you're going to get the toughest questions. So if you're in sales or if you're selling to your board, and we're always selling, let's make no mistake about it. We're not always selling a product or service. We're always selling something, an idea. You're selling at home. The restaurant you want to go to tonight, and why the family should go. You're always selling something. So we'll get that out of the way. What's next? You have to be prepared for the objections. So that is something, if you're doing a lot of board of directors style meetings, what are they going to say to this? First, was it clear enough? Assuming I communicated enough with the passion and the heart and everything I needed to put into it, what might they say next? Now let's practice that. So we actually do role play. I do a lot of role play. I do role play to the point where, since there's so many virtual calls, I literally say, okay, Alice, we're going to pretend the call starting. And I go bleep, bleep, bleep for the windows of the people coming into the call to get their brain ready that there's going to be that awkward first 2 minutes. And someone you don't know is going to come on before someone you do. And what do you say? Hey, hi, nice to meet you. How's the weather? These kind of things. Or say, hey, Alice, what are you excited about today? What's something that's gone really well for you today, Alice? Like, whatever it is, like maybe even shake it up in that way. But the point is, we get it. So your brain is ready for every situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, we could talk about this all day. And it's so, so important. I mean, the stories that you tell, the messages that you leave people with, you know, especially when you're a CEO, it's that vision that you have to communicate over and over again, and you've got to have the stories to back it up. So it's just so important. So you've got to help these CEOs understand, who are they talking to? Who's the audience? What do they want to get across? You ask them all these questions. You help them start building small little bites so that they get how to be concise and how to present that, help them with the deck, and then help them to practice, not to memorize, but to practice.
Exactly.
So they can, like you said, deliver it 10 different ways if they have to. Like, they can't be shaken. They know their material so well. Even if they get out of order a little bit, it's no problem. Or if their slide deck blows up, it's no problem. They can just get right back on track. And I think that is just so important. I think when people have that kind of confidence from preparing with someone like you, they really can shine in all of those different situations where they have to get a message across.
That's right. And what you're selling is belief. If you're a CEO, you are selling belief. Really, really, period. You have to sell the idea that you believe in what you're talking about. You have to sell people on believing you and buying into the belief that this thing is either going to work, that these numbers that are projected are going to happen, that you're going to turn the company around, whatever it is, that this new pivot is going to be the thing. Now, it might not be the thing forever, but they have to believe that the decisions that you have made, or the thing you're putting in front of people, they have to believe in what you're saying. How does that happen? You have to believe in what you're saying, because people can feel it. So I'm, again, not of the camp anymore. I used to have a slide that says, presentation is a performance. And like I said before, I'm not of the camp anymore that it's a performance. You have to perform. You have to perform at your best, but it has to be real. It has to be authentic. And you have to feel it so that your audience can feel it.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. What a great note to end on. Now, just before we part, I have a couple of questions for you that I like to ask all of my guests. The first one is, what is a book that you think every CEO should read?
I happen to have it on my desk.
Okay.
For those watching the video version, it's The Creative Act, A Way of Being. Oh. Okay. What a cool cover.
It is. Yeah. It's a circle with a dot in the middle.
So this is by Rick Rubin, famous producer. And basically this book reminds you that creativity is your responsibility, especially as a CEO. Creativity is good for business. It's good for life. It's good for your soul. And it reminds you that inspiration and creativity is everywhere if you keep yourself open to it. And creativity is the thing that's going to drive and save your business.
Yeah, there's just not enough of it right now. So I'm going to really recommend everybody read this book, especially when you are thinking about your customer and how to meet them where they are and how to make them wildly successful using what you've sold them. You need creativity. You just can't continue to do it the way that you always have. So I love that. And that's a great share. And the next question is, what is a podcast you listen to because it makes you think differently?
This is going to sound so cliche, but I've been devouring a lot of Diary of a CEO lately, because the topics are very contextual to everything going on in AI, in business, and it has my ear. And I think now I've just gotten into really enjoying the production value of the show too, right? It's just got a beautiful teaser intro. They get right into the conversation. The setting is good. The sound is good. And there's a real art of connection there. There's a real art of storytelling. And you'll notice yourself being drawn in, or at least I am, to the CEOs, celebrities, scientists, engineers, all the people on there who are given the space to tell a story and tell a story well. And they can be talking about the most complex things in the world, and they make it very accessible. And what the show does really well is they are focused on making that storytelling accessible to the point where they'll ask you, they'll say, hey, can you just clarify that? And they'll pop up at the bottom of the screen an explanation or a definition. So they're very accessible, but they're talking about like real world and game-changing topics. So, I mean, it's Diary of a CEO. Like, how more clear can you get? These are the thoughts and feelings and actions that CEOs are taking or should take or should know of across the world. So very cliche answer, because it's one of the top podcasts in the world, but I'm guilty of being a watcher.
All right. Well, good to know. It is a good one. I don't get to listen to it as much as I'd like to, but I have listened to some very, very interesting guests on that show. And the last question is, what does every CEO need to know to win in this market?
I would say 4 words. Facts tell, stories sell. So I would really lean into stories for feeling, and really that it's the clearest and boldest story that wins. It's the clarity, the feeling, the disruption, the pattern breaking approach that you have to storytelling that makes people actually feel and connect to something. Get into people's hearts before you worry about getting into their minds. And their wallets. don't worry about their wallets so fast.
That's right. Very good. Well, gosh, Jeff, thank you so much for being with me today on the show. Really appreciated the conversation.
Thank you. I hope you got what you need. I hope that some CEOs listening to this are going to walk away with some actionable tips. And like I said before, a great story is a terrible thing to waste. So get out there and tell better stories, everyone.
So if you want to find Jeff, go to LinkedIn and find him there. And if you would like to connect with him, please say that you saw him here or heard him here on my show. And then you can also ask him for the disruptive DNA framework, and he will send you that download.
Yeah, I'll send you a copy of that. And just remember, any friend of Alice is a friend of mine. So there we go.
All right. You have a great, great rest of your day and a great weekend.
Thank you, Alice. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed the show, please like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.